I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. Happy Sunday, I guess. The world did not end, or at least it hasn't yet at the time of this recording, and so we're still here. This is Doubting Dogma, and from the unincorporated county of Heathens, I'm Molly Ann Mormon. And and with us, I don't know how many miles up in Minnesota, is Riss McCool. Welcome back, Riss.
Thank you so much, as always.
How's the nasal congestion going? A little better.
It's a ton of fun. You know, I was recording Inciting Incident last night, and it looked like an episode of ER, but I'm good.
Oh, no. All right. Well, we have had some fun news on the Mormon front. This has been interesting. And the sad thing is that this even made the news, okay? So, students rejoice after Brigham Young University begins selling caffeinated soda.
Oh my goodness.
I know. If Planet X doesn't get us, this surely will. It's a sign of the times.
Or maybe that's why Planet X gets us, because students are drinking Coke.
Yeah. Maybe. But, okay, so for those few people not familiar with how crazy Mormons are about their caffeine, I grew up in a family that we did not drink caffeinated sodas. So if we had soda, it was Sprite, it was ginger ale, it was 7 Up, it was, you know.
Boring.
Yeah. Well. Not always. I mean, I like root beer, but again, you couldn't have certain root beers if they have caffeine, like Barks. You know, we could have Mug root beer or A&W, except when A&W for a little while decided they were going to put caffeine in it. But yeah, just that's how it was. And where that all stems from is they take it, some people take it from Section 89 of the Doctrine and Covenants, which is the Word of Wisdom. And there are a lot of Mormon families that don't view Section 89 that way. So, like, there were some people I knew at church growing up and stuff that, you know, they would drink Mountain Dew and stuff. But then, you know, there were always those that they would, I don't want to say parody, but sort of, they'd kind of, changed the words to a primary song, that it was, the song was Choose the Right, but they used to say, choose the Sprite when a Coke is placed before you. So, I mean, there was this whole culture about the no caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I mean, it doesn't list it anywhere in Section 89. I mean, it says, inasmuch as any man drinketh wine or strong drink among you, behold, it is not good. So, I mean, there's where their alcohol is. And then they say, again, strong drinks are not for the belly, but for the washing of your bodies. I guess they're saying just get your whiskey through osmosis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't drink it, but if it somehow ends up in your stomach already processed, it's totally cool.
Yeah. And then it says, tobacco's not for the body, nor for the belly, and it's not good for man, but is an herb for bruises and all sick cattle. And then it says hot drinks are not for the body or belly. And that's where the no coffee or tea stems from. And I actually read somewhere, I don't remember if it was on the Naked Mormonism Facebook page somewhere, but I actually read somewhere that it was not Joseph that decided that it was no coffee or tea. It was Hiram, Joseph's brother, who decided that must be what the hot drinks was in reference to, because we will have, like, hot cocoa all the time. Like, somehow that's acceptable, but coffee's not.
Oh, my God. I mean, once again, I know I say this a lot. Maybe it's because I didn't grow up in this, but the idea that the all-powerful, all-omniscient being of the universe cares which drink you have, I'm sorry, I can't process this. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And, I mean, the funny thing is, I remember one of my young women's leaders giving us our little lesson when I was a beehive. So when I was like 12 or 13. And they said, you know, well, here's the word of wisdom. Here's why, sort of. And it all boils down to because God said so. And because we need to obey this. And if the prophet says something, we have to follow it. And if the prophet came out and said tomorrow, God says you shouldn't eat apples anymore, it's not up for us to question why, even if science says that apples are good for us. It's up to us to follow what the prophet says, because that's what God says, and it's a test.
Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with maybe the fact that someone in the church owns an apple orchard.
It's just like, I'm going to control the minutia of your life.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. I legit am. I'm trying to see outside myself enough to understand why such minute details of someone's life is what God cares about. Like, let's just pretend there is this omniscient being, whatever it is, and it has a bunch of rules about not killing. I mean, rape isn't in there, but whatever, as Louis C.K. said, you know, but, you know, no, don't kill people. Don't take their shit. Don't drink soda. I know that just doesn't compute to me.
Yeah. And this is funny because, okay, I had to dig out my old scriptures for the Doctrine and Covenants here. And I've got all kinds of crap highlighted. And these are the scriptures that I took with me when I went through seminary class, right? Those early morning scripture study classes all through high school at 5:45 in the morning. Ugh. But I have got so many like little handouts and stuff stuck in there. And here's one, Doctrine and Covenants 89, Word of Wisdom. And it says, what about soft drinks containing habit-forming drugs or caffeine, such as cola drinks? Although soft drinks are not mentioned specifically in the Word of Wisdom, an official statement by the church's leaders reads, with reference to cola drinks, the church has never officially taken a position on this matter, but the leaders of the church have advised, and we do now specifically advise, against the use of any drink containing harmful habit-forming drugs under circumstances that would result in acquiring the habit. Any beverage that contains ingredients harmful to the body should be avoided. And this was apparently a priesthood bulletin from February 1972, page 4, is what the little reference at the bottom of it says. So, I mean, I guess that's where this all comes from. But at the same time, I mean, a hot cocoa has caffeine in it as well. So, I mean, I guess if you want to take caffeine as an addicting substance, you could say that you could get addicted to hot cocoa if you had it often enough, and then whatever.
Or how about the fact that Sprite has sugar? I'm pretty sure sugar has some addictive qualities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, horrible. Which is why, like, trying to give up sugar is such a hard thing, and that's why I'm still fluffy. But
ain't nothing wrong with being fluffy.
It just doesn't help me run. Of course, the doctor said I can't run, which has me all depressed, but... Well, I'm getting a second opinion, because the doctor also said there's nothing we can do right now with my knee. He said that it's just wearing out. I'm just, like, old on the inside of my knee. It's just a bunch of arthritis and stuff. And he said, well, further down the line, there are injections and stuff that can be done. And I'm thinking, okay, well, how long of running until we can do something? Because my age should not matter. I mean, it should be the condition of my knee. And if I walk into it knowing, okay, whatever we do now, like if we have to do some sort of replacement or partial replacement or something like that, so long as I acknowledge, okay, well, it's going to last 20 years, so we'll have to redo it again when I'm 56. I mean, that should be up to me, right? It shouldn't be, because I'm so young, we're not going to do this yet. Because we normally do it to old people, but ignore the fact that this woman has had arthritis in her knee since she was 20.
I'm sorry.
No, I just... Oh, it's so making me mad right now.
My dad.
I don't know how I got that tangent out of caffeinated sodas, but okay. Sorry.
Yeah, my dad went through something similar. He was really young and needed a knee replacement. And, you know, they were like, well, we don't do knee replacements on people of a certain age because, you know, you can only do it twice and they last this X amount of time, whatever. And it took him a while to explain to the doctor, like, this needs to happen. Like, there is no waiting. I can't function on it. So this story sounds all too familiar where the age, of course, does play a factor in what procedures you can get. I know some people I know have tried to get vasectomies or get their tubes tied as well. And they're like, well, you don't want any more kids? Are you sure? You
know, just, well, that or like, let's say you don't want any kids. And because I work with a bunch of guys, right? So that's no secret. I'm the only chick in my department. And they all sit there and they talk about all kinds of stuff. And I can tell you, like, a couple of the guys have low T, and there's a couple guys who have had vasectomies. And so, I mean, I know, like, all their personal business. It's ridiculous. But some of them have said, like, to get a vasectomy, like, they have to get their wife's permission and this kind of crap because the doctor won't do it. And I mean, it's just, oh my gosh, it's so stupid.
It really is. Just, you know, people talk about intrusive government. And, you know, they don't want government in their lives and they don't want X in their lives. And yet they're totally okay with people second guessing their own decisions. So it's almost like they just want to do whatever they want and fuck everybody else.
Yeah, it's just, oh my gosh. Yeah, so anyways, that's where the whole
caffeine.
After we go off on little side tangents, because I like them. They make conversations harder to follow. But yeah, and then like the word of wisdom also goes into like the things you should do, right? Like it says every herb in the season thereof and every fruit in the season thereof and all these things to be used with prudence and thanksgiving, you know? So like it tells you kind of what to eat, though now you can get fruit and stuff year round, whether it's in season or not, except for some things like, well, pomegranates is like only now, unfortunately. I love pomegranates. They're such a pain in the ass to get into, though. But, I mean, because you've got the farmers down in South America and in other areas where they are in season, and then they just ship them to us. So, like, this doesn't really apply anymore, I would say. But, I mean, back in the 1830s, it made sense.
And that's part of the problem with the whole, you know, undying, you know, eternal word of God, take it literally and everything. If you strip away even, you know, the skepticism about whether or not anything actually exists, when you base rules on arbitrary customs of the time and they become outdated, it just makes the practices look silly.
And next thing you know, you end up with the Amish. Sorry, this isn't an Amish bashing show.
Well,
they do ride their buggies up and down the street in front of my house all the time. So,
they make killer ice cream. Oh my God. Have you ever been to Shady Maple?
No, I haven't. My mom-in-law has.
That's a journey you need to make. And I'll say this for anybody who is ever near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Look up the Shady Maple smorgasbord and, you know, take $16 and go to breakfast. I don't care what you think of religion or Amish people or anything. That is the best breakfast you will ever have, guaranteed.
I might have to do that sometime. And I know, like, the greenhouse that I go to get my flowers every spring, like, they're run by probably the Mennonite, not the Amish, because they use actual electric cash registers and stuff. But still, you know, it's run by the Plain, as they're called. And they always have all these baked goods and everything outside. Oh my gosh. They make, like, the best shoe fly pie and whoopie pies and just, oh, so yummy. Sorry, I have a sweet tooth, can you tell?
I don't see a problem with this. And
I'm like, yeah, give me that there little pie that has, you know, molasses-based gooey stuff in it, and it's delicious.
You know, this sort of takes us into the idea that I had, which was, of course, based on the patron-only episode that Bethany and I did for the Insane Incident. And, you know, we have to talk about so many negative things, especially in this day and age. So I think, you know, sort of borrowing the idea from another show that's also mine, so I don't know if it's borrowing it or not, I think we should tell good stories about ourselves or good memories that we have. I know Callie does the good news. I like telling stories, and I know you do too. So let's tell a few good stories, just because outside of caffeine, there's not much particular to talk to that we haven't already covered.
Yeah, it's just, I just find it silly that apparently the church said in a priesthood bulletin in 72 that caffeine should be avoided, and yet in, I believe it was 2011? Oh, 2012. In 2012, they came out and said, no, it doesn't specifically say it, so you're okay. So, I guess they forgot about that or something, but whatever, they're crazy. So, did you want to start?
Well, I, of course, have to figure out which ones I haven't already told, you know, the ones I didn't tell last night. So, I guess, should I tell something from childhood or the last year or, you know, give me a place to start.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
And we're off to a flying start.
I know. I'm just, because when you suggested it, like, my mind completely went blank and I was like, good story. I don't know. Do I have any good stories? I'm like, of course I have good stories. I just, because I just, like, I'm blonde. That's my excuse. Dang
it. That's all right. One thing that I've always had going on through my life, in addition to my obliviousness, if that oblivion, whatever you want to call it, is that I have a habit of meeting celebrities and not realizing who they are until afterwards, sometimes way afterwards. I've stood in elevators and just chatted with people and had so many, do you have any idea who you were just talking to moments? I'm like, no. One in particular was, my dad lived in South Bend at the time, and we were just chatting with some person and, you know, thought nothing of it because my dad tends to be the kind of person who just talks to everybody. I have never figured out that skill, although people seem to talk to me, so I guess it balances it out. And the next day, We just happened to have the TV on, and it was the Notre Dame basketball coach. Like, it was just, I've had so many of those where it's just like, oh, that's who I was talking to.
I had a little feeling of that, like, at your live show, or, well, right after your live show, you know, because I'm there chatting with Thomas and Andrew, right? And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I need to get a picture with them. And so, like, there was someone standing there, and I'm like, hey, do you mind, you know, hand them my phone, they take a picture. And then I realize it's Sharon Frankel, and I'm like, oh, oh, I'm sorry. So, Sharon, if you're listening, I'm sorry, I did not realize who you were. You are awesome. So, yeah, I was... I felt kind of embarrassed about that after the fact. I'm like, oh. I was just like, here, random person.
Oh, no, don't feel embarrassed. I have done that so many times, apparently.
Oh, my gosh.
And another one. God, this one's bad. I was in Cleveland, and it was a bus trip to the Browns game. And I think it was 2011. And I'm just talking to some older, nice guy, just shooting the shit in the hotel. And, you know, 20 minutes later, I just walk away, and someone else who was on the bus trip was like, you know, you were just talking to Bernie Kosar, right? And I was like, what? Because that, for those who don't follow football, he was like the last quarterback in Cleveland who was actually good. So, like, you know, a man about town, so to speak, in that particular city. And I'm just sitting there like, yeah, it's just some guy just doing my thing. Another one, when I worked at Nordstrom in the Mall of America back in 2010, I picked up someone's shoes and brought it out to them. It was the Old Spice guy. The original one. The, hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now look at me. That guy.
The one that was riding backwards on a horse, and now I'm doing this, and then...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the weird thing about going to Mall of America, because it's not only a tourist spot, but it has direct access from the airport. So there are often people just traveling through Minnesota who happen to come by that for a few hours, or, you know, make it a destination spot. Or because it's in the center of everything, like every traveling national act comes through here. So, you know, you don't think of this as a town like New York or L.A. or Chicago where, you know, oh, you could just run into anybody at any time because nobody thinks about Minneapolis and St. Paul that way. But everything comes through here.
Yeah. Now, this is how, like, geographically unsure I am. Now, is Mall of America in Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Minneapolis.
Okay.
Technically, it's in Bloomington, but it's Minneapolis.
Okay. Call that good. Let me see. My first pro sporting event was when I was in sixth grade. And it was the inaugural. I can't talk some good today. But it was the inaugural year for the Colorado Rockies. Because mm-hmm. I grew up there close to Denver. And yes. And I actually won a pair of tickets in a raffle at school. And so I went to my first game there. They actually played their first season at Mile High Stadium, which was the Broncos football field there.
Mm-hmm.
Which they had finagled funny, so right field was really deep.
Right.
It was a really weird baseball year because they're playing on a football field.
Right.
But, yeah, so I got to go to my first baseball game with tickets that I had won. And I mean, it was right after I turned 12, so it was sort of like a little birthday thing, too, because my dad and I went, and so that was just really cool, because I had only gotten into baseball a couple years before I started mm-hmm. watching baseball with my dad, and his team was the Minnesota Twins, because the Twins used to be the Washington Senators, and mm-hmm. my dad had grown up in Arlington. So, like, they were his home team, and then when they moved up to Minnesota and changed their name, like, he just continued to follow them because that was the team he'd always rooted for. So,
yeah.
You know, he's still a Twins fan, but he's also a Rockies fan, and, you know, because they're the home team. But
mm-hmm.
Since they're in different leagues, I guess it balances out, right? You know, so, I mean, I first started watching baseball when Kirby Puckett was still playing for the Twins. So I watched a couple World Series with them.
Yeah, second so. Only to Prince as far as reverence goes around here.
Yeah.
Speaking of baseball, I had a very interesting experience as a young kid with baseball, because I got to go to a couple of things that I didn't understand how much of a big deal it was to go to them until I was much older. When I was 10 years old, the Indians had, like, their first playoff season since 1954. And so, you know, 41 years, but I had only been alive for 10 of them. So what the hell did I know?
Yeah.
And my grandfather ended up getting tickets to the World Series. And
ooh.
I got to go to the World Series as a 10-year-old kid. And, you know, in my head, it was just like, oh, it's any other game. This happens every year. Not so much, because they, you know, they got back in 97, but after that, they didn't get back until this past year, at which point I ended up getting to go to the game that was 21 years to the day of when I got to go with my grandfather in 1995.
Oh, and then, that is awesome.
Yeah. And then the very next season, my dad's coworker had season tickets for the Philadelphia Phillies, and the All-Star game happened to be in Veterans Stadium that year. And I got to go to the All-Star game 6 months after I got to go to the World Series. And it was just, I look back at that now and go, Rissy, you should have stopped and appreciated it a little bit.
Yeah, I remember thoughts about just random things where I was like, man, I wish I would have had the better appreciation when it happened, you know?
For instance?
I can't even remember. I just remember having those feelings at different times, so, yeah.
Well, here's another one that involves a celebrity that some people might know. I'm a bit of a stand-up connoisseur, so I've, you know, traveled to see countless stand-up comedians, and I told a couple of these stories on Inciting Incident, but I'll tell one that I didn't tell there. I first saw Lewis Black in 2004, and between then and last year, I saw him 10 different times, and I had always heard that he did, like, meet and greets after the show, but for some reason, I always saw him on a Sunday, and on Sunday, he doesn't do it. He goes home because it's the end of the tour, or it's the end of, you know, it's a travel day break or whatever. So all these different times that I got to see one of my favorite comedians, so many different people had had the chance to meet him, and I just had bad timing. And then I believe it was in November in Philly, I saw that he was coming, and it was at the same theater I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I was like, yeah, what the hell, maybe I can. I went with a schoolmate. And I told her, when I got the sense that it was getting close to the end of the show, I'm going to go get in line now, because this is the 10th time I've seen him, and something has happened every single time that I've not been able to meet the man. And I was like, I'm going to get in line now. I'm going to be the first one, and I'm going to be like, you've been avoiding me, Mr. Black. And it just so happened that someone who knew him got in line right behind me. And my entire, I don't want to say attitude, but feeling of the situation changed, because she was saying things like, oh, he'll be so happy because you're a young fan. And, you know, I don't often think of myself as young, but then I looked at the rest of the audience and I was like, oh, okay. So I met him and he was shocked that he meant that much to me, and signed my shirt and took a picture with me and everything. Just really nice guy, and it was cool to meet someone that I had been following for so long, finally.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember seeing those pictures, so I was like, yay, that's cool. But let me see. I have told this story on my other blog. It was one of my first blog posts on my original blog, which I'm not going to name here. But I was majoring in equine science when I was going to college before I joined the Army. And one of the last classes that I took, actually it was the last class that I took before I left for basic training, because I took this class over the summer semester, and it was Intermediate English Equitation, which is just a fancy way of saying English horseback riding. And we did like flat work, and we did some dressage, which is like the horseback ballet where you get the horse to do like fancy footwork and stuff. And then we also did some jumping, like over all the fences and stuff. And oh my gosh, I loved it. That was just an amazing feeling. But for the final exam, like there was a written part, which was mostly like terms and, you know, horse anatomy. Like this is, you know, the pole and this is the, you know, whatever. And the parts of the bridle and saddle and that kind of stuff. Just like terminology stuff. And then there was the practical portion, which included flat work, which like some serpentines and lead changes. And then there was a little bit of dressage where you'd have to get him to try and like walk sideways and stuff. And then there was the jumping course. And I had this tall, leggy horse. I mean, he was all legs, and his name was Mikey. And so I'm taking Mikey over these jumps, and I did not know it at the time, but in order for him to jump smoothly, because he is so lanky, like, you really have to feel like you're hauling ass. And, you know, so we're just jumping along and doing great, and then the second to last jump on the course, we came up a little too close to the fence. And, you know, I didn't know this. I'm a novice, you know, whatever. Any jumping that I've done has been in this class. So I ask him to jump, and he's like, sure, what the hell? So he kind of sits back on his haunches and then, like, boinks over the fence. And the way he jumped just, like, popped me right out of the saddle. And so I'm there as we're going over the fence. I'm going over his shoulder, and I see myself falling. And I was like, okay, one of the worst things to do is to still try and hold on. That's how people get hung up in the stirrup and get drug and everything. So, I mean, I literally like closed my eyes and just let go. And so I fall over, I land in front of him. I bounce on the ground, like I landed flat on my back, completely knocked the wind out of me. And so I'm there, you know, because I can't breathe. I can just feel dirt all over me, and like it's on my face, it's on my eyelids. I kind of open my eyes just enough to like see through my lashes, and I see Mikey standing over me, like looking down at me like, oh my gosh, what did I do? I'm gonna get in so much trouble. You know. And then I don't remember if he then jumped over me or ran around me, but he took off to the other side of the arena, you know. So he takes off, and I'm there like still trying to get my breath. And, you know, someone rounds him up, and they come over, and they check on me, and they're like, are you okay? You know, because I didn't move. You know, mm-hmm. I was actually pretty lucky that they had just, they go through and you know, because it's a dirt arena. So they go through with a tractor and the little something on the back, and they, you know, because it gets all packed down. So they, I don't know, like, somehow till it up and clean up the poo and whatever. So I was like, I was lucky that they did that the night before. So the dirt wasn't hard packed. It was at least a little quote unquote soft. So I finally get my breath back. I get up, I walk it off, whatever, you know, the rest of the class finishes their jumping course. And instead of my teacher saying, okay, you screwed it, 'cause whatever, you know, she gave me the chance to jump the course again. And she said I could either use Mikey again or choose a different horse. And one of the other people suggested, well, here, take Roy. He's blind in one eye. He had cataracts. And I had ridden him before, but not on the jumping course. I'd never jumped him. I'd only ridden him for flat work. And they said, he will jump anything you ask. You just, you know, he likes to slow down, so just make sure you keep a heel on him to keep him going. So my lower back, like my tailbone, hurt so bad. Like, they had to actually give me a leg up into the saddle because I couldn't get my leg up there that high. And so I get up there, and when you jump, you know, you always see the rider sitting there in, like, they're standing in the stirrups and they're leaning forward, and that's called 2-point, because normally when you're sitting there, that's 3-point, because there's the 3 points that all line up. It's your shoulders, your hips, and your heels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in 2-point, it's only your hips and heels, and you're standing there. Well, my lower back hurt so much, like, I could not sit down. And so I rode the whole course in 2-point, which normally you're supposed to sit back down after you land from the jump. So I rode in 2-point, and Roy just went and jumped over all the fences, and I passed, and I was like, yes, whew. But, I mean, it was so crazy. And then when I get home, you know, because I'm there, I'm wearing the English breeches and the knee-high boots, right? I get home, get the boots off, and I have got dirt inside these boots that they're like tight on your calves. I'm like, I still don't understand how the dirt got in there. But I mean, it was crazy. But there's no feeling in the world like jumping a horse. It is amazing. And I would absolutely do it again, even though I got thrown.
Yeah. Awesome.
And even though everyone says to me, well, you know, that's how Christopher Reeves, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I'm just,
right.
I'm like, I acknowledge that risk. And that's, you know, one I would absolutely be willing to take. I would love to, like, have my own horse, like a warm blood or something, and do 3-day eventing, which involves, I believe it's a race, a dressage, and hunter jumper stuff or something, if I remember right. But, oh, so fun. I love horses. Too bad the hubby is, like, deathly allergic.
Oh, but, goodness.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of stories like that. I know the feeling, especially dietary.
Yeah, he's got some of that, and he's got, like, I mean, even the dogs, he gets contact allergies to him, but, yeah, good times.
Here's a fun one. It's not of a specific day, but had this friend in middle school. His name was Brenton, and he and I, like, crossed social classes to be friends. It didn't make any sense. He was very jockey and friends with all the athletes, and I was not. And for some reason, we just got along. And for a while, I was spending every weekend at his house because he wasn't too far away. And part of that was to get away from certain familial things that were going on at the time. But it was nice to just relax with somebody. because things were probably the most difficult they ever were for me at that point in time. But he got asked to leave high school, same as me. And he went down to Florida, so I didn't see him for a very long time. But we started playing football together again in our mid-20s. So, you know, I would see him there, and we got reacquainted. I got to know his wife, his family, the whole thing. And I had just gone back to Hack at the time. And because I did it, he thought he could do it too. So he went back to Hack, except it was Hack Lebanon. And I made Phi Theta Kappa. He made Phi Theta Kappa. I got into Penn. He got into Temple. And then we both spent the exact same amount of semesters in Philadelphia. And then we both graduated on the same day. So it was so weird how our trajectories were unique and unlikely. And we both were given up on by the same high school. And then turned around, went to the same community college, and ended up in the same city for college. And then, you know, graduated with honors from schools in the same city.
That's just one of those stories where you're like, I don't know, like when you hear about the twins that have been separated at birth or whatever, and they both tend to do the same things. Even though I know you guys aren't related, it just is like one of those. It's just, I don't want to say crazy, but, you know, it's like, wow.
Well, the best one is still how me and Aiden met and ended up together, because I grew up with his adopted older sister. And me, her, and Brian in high school considered ourselves triplets separated at birth, and I called her my sister for 15 years, something like that. And she moved to North Carolina in 2006. And then shortly after told me she had found her birth family. And I got to meet that birth family at the wedding, one of whom was Aiden. Fast forward, Aiden and I get married. My friend is at the wedding because it's her younger brother. Yeah. And part of my wedding speech is, hey, me calling you my sister for so long was kind of foreshadowing, wasn't it? Because now you actually are.
Oh, that's cool.
So you mentioned we have a new patron, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, we have a new patron. And I hope I am pronouncing this right. Aaron Faulkner. And it's spelled E-H-R-E-N. So I guess it's Aaron. So thank you, Aaron, for your pledge. So yeah, that is just, that's cool. I still don't understand why anyone listens and gives money. But I'm not going to complain. Thank you so very much.
I feel that way literally every single time someone does on anything that I do, or when they approach me, I heard you on whatever and I listened to your shows. I'm like, why? Why would you do that?
Well, and like at your live show, oh geez, now I'm Amy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Amy's there like and asked for a photo with me, and she's like, no, one with you. And I was like, what? You know, because I thought she was trying to like hand me her phone so I could take a picture of her with someone else. And she's like, no, I want with you. And I was like, why? But yeah,
the GAM live show in Austin was last night, and I'm seeing a whole bunch of people post pictures from it.
Oh my gosh, I so wish I could like go to all of those.
Well, there was someone who made a comment on one of the pictures that really stood out to me, even though I know them as people, like friends now, but even still, someone commented like, they always look absolutely thrilled to meet fans and take pictures with them. And it's like, yeah, they really do. Like, no matter how they're feeling, no matter what they're dealing with, anytime I see a picture of them with somebody else, they look elated. And I think that's really neat.
Yeah, I know after your 100th at the live show, I was sitting there and I got to talk to Heath for a good bit. And that was, I mean, that was just really cool because, you know, I mean, on the show and everything, he's like, whatever, I quit the show, you know, but he is so sincere. And he was just like just how much he pays attention and was listening. And it was just like, wow, really, you know, and it was just really cool getting to actually sit there and talk to him for a good bit too. That was just really neat.
Yeah, when I went up to Secret Lair for the first time, I'll never forget that there were four of us. It was me, Heath, Noah, and Lala, and we were each at a corner of the table. And at no point did they make me feel like it was them talking and then I was just there. It was like an involved conversation. And that was neat. That was so, you know, these people I admired and really trusted their views on things were listening to my input. And I know that might sound frivolous, but, you know, how many years have I dealt with people who were like, no, my opinion counts. You can shut the fuck up. But then Heath said, do you want a cup of coffee? And I was like, oh, I don't really drink coffee. And Lala looks at me and says, trust me, have a cup of Heath's coffee. And I did. And now I tell anybody, if Heath Enright offers you a cup of coffee, you take it. Because that was the best damn coffee I've ever had in my life.
See, now I need to go to the Secret Lair.
Right. So, I'm hoping they'll be at PastaCon. I miss them.
Yeah, I still feel like I completely made an idiot of myself when Noah was on the show.
Yeah.
Because my brain was just completely dead. Because I'm just, like, just so overwhelmed that he would even come on the little show and talk to me. Like, I couldn't think of anything to say.
Yeah. And I have some, you know, dissonance with that. Because at the same time, some people feel the same way when I come on their show. And I'm like, well, it's just me. Like, I will come on any show for any reason except to like debate the validity of my gender identity or something like that. But
oh yeah, the hell with those people.
Yeah, but The point is, like, I have been on shows that nobody has listened to and I'm fine with it. I enjoy doing this a lot, so I think maybe he has the same thing going on.
Yeah, and I mean, he was so gracious about it, you know. There are minutes that I cut out that he's like, hey, you know, don't worry about it, we all started there. So but at the same time, I still feel like, oh my gosh, I was such an idiot.
Well, a lot of us deal with that. I still deal with that. That's why I don't listen to my own shows.
Yeah, I only listen to it when I'm editing my blonde out. But then it's funny because, like, when I'm on someone else's show, like when I've been on your show or when I was on Everyone's Agnostic, like, it sounds so freaking egotistical, but like, I'll listen to those shows like four or five times.
Yeah, I would say the only thing I've actually been on that I've listened to a lot was my appearance on GAM. And that's because Eli and Noah still make me laugh. It's not because of me. It's just because it's like I get to work with people that goddamn funny. And then people told me I was funny. And it's just like, these are real funny people. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And then I think the real interesting thing about, like, when I was on Everyone's Agnostic, I think it was episode 263 of theirs, but I'm not sure. But sitting there talking to Bob and Cass, like, and the train of thought that you go down, like, really, it was a path of self-discovery for me as well. Like, just voicing, okay, this is where I came from, and then this is what happened to me, and, like, why I left. And you realize the reasons why I left the church are, like, personal affronts, whereas the reason why I left religion was, you know, because of Cogdis and whatever, you know. But, like, there are two separate things going on, if that makes sense, you know. Like, even before leaving the Mormon church, I was already, like, fed up with it for these reasons. But then, you know, I add these other reasons on top of it, and that's when I was like, well, the hell with religion. But if that makes any sense. I don't know if I'm making sense. Whatever. It's
cool.
It makes sense in my head. Because there's the hell with Mormonism. And then there's the hell with all of it. So
indeed.
The part of it's very, very emotional, and the other was just the logic coming in. So
awesome. Well, that worked out a lot better than you thought it would, didn't it?
Yeah, that went well.
Good.
And then next week we can rag on Spencer W. Kimball some more. I will
work. That'll eventually happen.
I like how they're like, are you still doing that? And yeah, kind of. I got the book here.
Sort of.
Yeah, so I will finish my notes, which are totally done and absolutely ready to go.
I'm not going to read it. I'll just listen to your work.
And then you can chime in and say, he sucks.
Yeah.
But,
spoiler.
All right. So, since the Earth didn't end from Planet X yet that we know of, though it's after noon Eastern time, so
running
it's
out of
already
time.
Tomorrow in Australia, so it can't have ended, right?
Well, of course, the world's going to end on American time.
Oh, I forgot. We're egotistical jackasses.
That's right.
It's all about us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've got a narcissistic freaking tangerine as president.
Among other things, yep.
Yeah. Hate him. Anyways, moving on. Well, Riz, thanks for joining me.
As always.
And thank everybody for listening to our little story times, and we will
be back in the age of a new world.
Since it didn't end. And caffeine is a thing.
Yep.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.